What's up, y'all? It's your girl, Ari Chambers here, and I'm sitting next to some legends. And because they are legends, I don't want to do them a disservice. So I'm going to start with you, T. Introduce yourself.
So I'm Tisha Panichero, born in Portugal, come over here to the States, and I guess I'm a WNBA legend. I don't know.
Yes, queen. Take your time with your intro. Yes.
I'm Chastity Melvin, North Carolina's finest, NC State Wolfpack, you already know, WNBA legend, and
I'm Mo Curry, you know, one of the realest you'll ever know. Period. WNBA legend, long career.
Chains around the neck, just shining.
Here for All-Star, about to have a good time.
Let's get into it. Legends are beside me, and each of you all impacted the game in such a unique way and at different times, but are still so close to the game. But before we even get into that, I'm looking at this flag that's in front of us, and it's 25 years since the inaugural WNBA All-Star Game. Tisha, I know you were a part of it as you've signed this, and you walked in just swagging. I don't think that people can see if they're just listening to this, but a freaking legend, and you played at the first All-Star Game. So from that until now, how have you seen the All-Stars in particular evolve over time?
I mean, honestly, to say that it was 25 years ago is kind of crazy to begin with, but that was an amazing experience, and to be in New York, have Whitney Houston sing the national anthem, and to just be a part of history, really, it was amazing. And 27 years later, here we are in Vegas to host another All-Star Game, and I just definitely feel like the WNBA has taken steps forward. The game is in great hands. I mean, little girls in high school now can definitely dream about playing in the WNBA because they know the league is here and is strong, has an amazing foundation, and has grown tremendously. So I just see that that we have taken steps forward, and I'm proud to obviously been part of history with the first one and still kind of be in it 27 years later.
I love what you said about the younger generation being able to see you all three of y'all. They were born into it, to be honest. Like, if you think about it, there are people in the league now that were born in the 2000s.
Yeah.
So they never had to live without a WNBA. They never had to live without y'all being in these high spaces. And then I was walking here about to get to y'all and I saw a high school group, and I just think that the impact that the youth have, I mean, that you all have on the youth is dope. So, Chastity, Mo, what are y'all seeing about the infectiousness of women's basketball? And have you ever been able to, like, sit with it and know, like, how much of an impact y'all have made on the game?
I think I recognize it every day. I coach high school basketball this offseason, and just hearing the young girls talk about the WNBA and actually in high school say, I want to play in the WNBA. Before, like, in high school, we weren't saying that. Well, maybe Mo. Mo's younger than me. So, but like.
Mo's like, yeah.
Yeah. Mo was that way. But like, I just remember, you know, the inaugural season and Cynthia Cooper with Raise the Roof, like, so Cheryl Swoops. Lisa Leslie, so they inspired me to want to be in the league, and now it's just a trickle-down effect. So the WNBA definitely has an impact, but now it's more global. Everyone across the board knows about the WNBA, and just being here in Vegas this entire week, I'm like, I'm having people stop me, are you playing, are you on the Aces? And I'm like, you know, but no, really, in some cities you don't have that where you have teams, so Mark and them have done a really good job, because everywhere I've gone, someone has stopped me. You know, I can be in D.C. when I do the on-air for the pregame show.
Yeah, you do.
And, you know, I played in D.C. and I don't have people stopping me, you know, when I'm out in the city. So, you know, it just goes to show if you brand your team and you're really behind your team, it really impacts, it impacts the whole city. Like,
you get a return.
On the bus, on the shuttles, wherever, people are like, yeah, I root for the Aces. The WNBA is the greatest. And all the guys are wearing the shirts. So it definitely has a huge impact.
I agree. I mean, I saw my driver was actually talking to me about the league, and like, I was like, oh, I know nothing. Just tell me everything. And he was just going off wrong, but at least he was enthused about it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But it's this talk about, like, they're having conversations. You're right. Yeah. That's what we need.
I got in an Uber yesterday, and the guy is driving, and I keep seeing, like, looking at me, and I'm like, like, I have to ask you, were you at the Aces game against the Mercury on Tuesday? I think I saw you on the billboard. I was like, on the Jumbotron, and I was like, yep, that was me. He was like, I knew it was you. Pachero, what you last name? I was like, you're close enough. It's Panichero. He was like, all right, can we get a selfie? I was like, after you drive.
Not invite.
Yeah, I know you got a you know. Danger. Yeah, I was like, yeah. No, but that's cool. I mean, there's billboards everywhere you go here.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, if you invest, you get a return, you know. And Mark Davis, I mean, kudos to him because he really is doing his thing over here. And everybody, the whole city. I mean, obviously they won, so that helps. Mm-hmm. But the whole city, you can tell, is just a buzz about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the exposure. Like, the league, you know, through social media, mm-hmm. through these different platforms that have been started by athletes or, like, supported by athletes, or just if you show them, the people will come. And, like, I think where the league is now is a true test to meant to, you know, you put them there, you give them the exposure, people will come. And, like, I think from that, the league will continue to grow. All-Star is such a big thing. Even now, like, former players didn't really go to All-Star as much mm-hmm. as we do now. But now it's kind of like every year I look forward to coming to All-Star because it's a good time. I get to catch up with, like, yeah. some old heads like myself. And you see some fans and you have a good time and you get to watch the talent. Right. The talent is great. So I think just that's a part of, you know, continuing to grow the league and having older players still support the league.
What was the turning point, though? You mentioned that players didn't used to go. Why y'all be popping up now?
I mean, first they used to have it in Connecticut.
Oh, what is everybody's literal beef for Connecticut?
No, to be fair.
Before they started disrespect.
No, to be fair, it is very hard to get flights into Connecticut.
That's true. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I mean, Vegas, all day, every day.
The airport's right there.
You can get to Vegas, so.
I mean, can we keep it 100? I mean, it's really feeling welcome, you know? I think, you know, when you watch the NBA All-Star game, who's sitting courtside? All the legends, the people that started the pioneer. Years, right? Who's sitting courtside at the WNBA All-Star game? NBA players, right? So, I mean, Retired Players Association really is putting all of us back together. Mm-hmm. And I think just like Mo said, coming here is like a little reunion. You know, it's like a family reunion because you've seen your peers that you have played with or against, but maybe feeling welcome. I think that's the thing from the WNBA, and that's one thing that I told Kathy. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys have to embrace the former players mm-hmm. and make them feel welcome, not that you retire, you don't exist anymore. So I think feeling welcome and, you know, the league and obviously the Retired Players Association has done an amazing job to bring everybody together. But that's important in my point of view.
Yeah, definitely the Retired Players Association. I've been a part of for a long time. And obviously with our schedules, it's kind of hard. People have different careers to just take off, you know, yeah. 2 or 3 days to come and support. But I think also Mark Davis, like when he started his reunions with bringing all the players that played for San Antonio, yeah. Like, I think he gave the blueprint and showed, you know, the WNBA and Kathy, like, hey, this is kind of how you do it.
Yeah.
Like,
look, it was dope looking at y'all's pictures. I'm like, look at y'all.
Yeah, like, you're doing this year. I'm like, okay, can every, well, Cleveland folded, but can the Sky, can the Mystics do it? They do it every year. He brings all the players back. Yeah. And it's very instrumental, but look, I mean, I feel like it's had a huge impact on the success of the Aces. Because I believe when you honor the past and you remember the past, it just fuels and empowers your organization because the team kind of see, they know the history and obviously they want to show they're better. Yeah. And so they're motivated. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can see it across the board of professional sports in college, you know, like the Dukes, the Carolina, they honor all their former players and they've consistently been successful. Yeah. But they bring all their players back.
Yeah.
Do they not? Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like, so when you do that, I think you gotta, like she said, when they have the NBA All-Star game, they have all the legends on the front. Like, they pay homage to them. And obviously, the NBA has been around for 76 years. Mm-hmm. So it does correlate.
Yeah.
Do y'all feel appreciated now? Because I know that there was a time where I would call it like the dark days of not knowing the history of the WNBA from the general public. But as you're talking to Kathy and bridging the gap with the Players Association, the Retired Players Association, the WNBA, I've seen growth. But is it enough for y'all? Do y'all feel the flowers?
I won't say I don't feel like the WNBA doesn't appreciate us. I think they do appreciate us. I believe that they haven't found the balance in honoring the legends and merging the future, the present, and the mm-hmm. past together from a marketing standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think there are certain things they can do brand-wise and marketing-wise, and I don't know if they don't have the sponsorships, the money, the dollars to do that. Mm-hmm. The NBA has done a great job of that, whether they have commercials with a legend and, you know, a present player. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's merging the two. and branding the two. Like, you don't really see that. Like, we need to see the Cynthia Coopers, you know, with Cooper, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to, with Kai Cooper from Chicago Sky, you know, we need to see Lisa Leslie with Elena Deladon maybe doing a commercial, you mm-hmm. know, or like the, like stuff like that. Like, so there are little things I think that they can do from a brand and marketing perspective that kind of makes us feel like, oh yeah, you haven't forgot about us. But I think it's a broad statement to say they don't appreciate us. I mean, we started the league. You know, period. So I do believe there's an appreciation factor there. I just think there's a lot on their plate in trying to grow the league and impact it from a global standpoint. And now it's just they're concerned on the present players. Okay, how do we market them? But I think there's some space in there to market us and brand us at the same time.
I think it depends on the organization. Mm-hmm. Like, I played for DC most of my career. I'm a DC girl, so I feel supported there, and I think they appreciate mm-hmm. Their players. But like Chad said, in trying to grow the league, it's a lot on their plate, just mm-hmm. trying to support the current players, figuring out a, you know, opportunity to support former players. And I think some organizations have kind of set up a position where there's somebody that kind of handles past players to be able to, you know, create programming or events or have opportunities to bring players back. But I think overall, the league is appreciative, you know, mm-hmm. of players like T and like Chassie. And like, as I grew up, those are the type of players I watch. I mean, I played with Chassie, but, you know, I always respected the game and respected the pioneers and was always grateful for the players that came before me. And I think it helped me growing up in a city that had a WNBA team, because then mm-hmm. I could go and support and I could go outside and wait for the players to come through. And like, you know, it's so crazy, full circle. And, you know, Nikki McCray, who recently passed, and growing up in DC, she played for DC, mm-hmm. and I just remember I used to go to all the games, and then I would wait outside of the arena for the players to drive out just so I could see them and like wave to the players. And Nikki McCray was always a player who would stop for us, and like one time she gave my cousin her shoe, and my cousin still has the shoe and she signed it. So just paying respect to those players and being appreciative, I think it trickles down from current players respecting the past and then, like, you know, organizations showing appreciation for their former players, too.
I love the word respect. Yes. It resonated with me when you were speaking about it. What do you all respect most about the game?
Everything. I mean, I started playing when I was 5 back in Portugal. So, I mean, even if you go on my phone, 90% of my contacts I met through basketball. I mean, the money that I've made, it was my job. The people that I've connected with, the memories that I have. I mean, I don't want to say basketball was my life because I don't want to make it like that serious, but it was that serious for me, you know?
Paula's life.
Yeah, Paula's life, you know?
It's
like,
true.
For a little girl from Portugal, from a small city that has like 30,000 people, to risk it all to come here to follow my dream, and I just wanted to be the best player that I could be. I didn't necessarily knew like what it meant, but I just wanted to risk it all and then just live with the consequences. So obviously basketball, it's amazing in my life, and I knew that once I retired that I wanted to stay involved and just kind of pay it forward and just continue to do what we can for the game to continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
I have a high level of respect because I've been a part of a lot of folding of professional leagues.
We don't talk about the folding.
Yeah,
we should.
At the end of the day, you know, like, but I guess first and foremost, I was coached by one of the pioneers of women's basketball, and Coach K-Yow and Coach Hatchell growing up in North Carolina. So I know their stories and how much they put in women's mm-hmm. basketball. So for me, I've always had a high level of respect for basketball just because of that. And it's just trickled on into, you know, the professional league. And obviously I played in the ABL as well, mm-hmm. and the ABL folded. So I know how quickly you can have something and reach a dream and it be taken away.
Yeah.
So for me, I don't take it for granted. I'm super passionate about the WNBA and our women's league, you know, having growth and growing, but also having women have important roles in the mm-hmm. WNBA. And so that's where I think the real respect comes from, because I don't want our WNBA to turn into the NBA.
Mm.
And it could easily do that.
Yeah, I guess.
No, that's right. Don't push it out of you now. I'm not going to push it out of you.
I mean, I respect the game. Just like, I would say, like, basketball was my life for a mm-hmm. long time. And a lot of the opportunities that came my way was because of the sport, the travels I've had around the world. You know, all of us play internationally. I think the game brings so much more than what you do on the court, just the relationships mm-hmm. that you build. Where I currently work now is because of my, you know, time mm-hmm. through basketball. So respecting the game, if you respect the game, it can give a lot back to you.
Yeah. What Chassie said, I mean, I'm a girl from Raleigh, North Carolina, so I have the exact same experience as you, looking at Coach K. Yao, and then down the street, Sylvia Hatch, and then I had the fortunate of my parents drove me to the Sting games, and I saw Dawn Staley. And it's just, having those women figures in such high places can really shape, like, your entire life. And Tisha, ball is life. And I yes. never dribbled a ball in my life, but it was right. still my life. And I stayed close to the game. And you all, even beyond your playing career, stayed close to the game. Do you feel the inherent responsibility to carry that and pass the torch? Or are you staying more so for the love? Why did you stay close to the game?
I mean, when you love something, you want to have it close, right? So to me, basketball is my first love. And like I said, it's my passion. And they say if you do, you know, what you love, you don't work a day in your life. So I knew for sure that I wanted to stay close. Mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted to give back to the game and kind of pay it forward. I knew that I didn't want to coach. I knew that much. So I was just trying to find.
So you picked a harder job.
Yeah, basically.
I'd be calling my agent at 3 yeah. in the morning. I'm like, listen.
Yeah, but, you know, it's I really love it, and I just can see basketball disappearing out of my life once I retire from playing. So I just wanted to find something that I could still, like, contribute to the game, still be involved, but in a different way. And before I retired, I just started thinking about the process of, you know, what I wanted to do. And at the time, like, this is, like, 2010, 2011, when I started thinking about it, it wasn't too many women representing women, especially women that played basketball. Like, mm-hmm. when I give advice to my players, it's based on experience. I literally have been in their shoes, and everything they're going to go through, I've been through it. So to me, it just made sense. The more I thought about it, it's just what I wanted to do. And here I am, like, almost 12 years into it, you know? So it's kind of crazy.
It's been that long.
Huh? I retired in 2012, so, yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, my God,
yeah.
Time flies.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Every time I try to leave, WNBA keeps calling. No, at the end of the day, I try to get away from it, but it's just, since I, you know, you have a high level of respect for it, you know, I mean, if you know some of the stories of the legends and what they went through, also having to go overseas, and one of my late great, I mean, a great favorites of mine, Teresa Edwards, mm-hmm. you know, like, just her career and how she kept playing basketball when it was just very hard to, mm-hmm. And all those Olympians, actually, you know, just playing when no one cared about women's basketball. Mm-hmm. So for me, I do feel a sense of responsibility that if I can and I have the position, or if I ever get roles, like, I want to stay around the league. So my ultimate goal is to be able to make those big time decisions in the WNBA and make sure that it's successful. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you know, when you see something fold and go away, like, you want, is I guess for me, I have a sense of, like, I don't take this for granted.
Yeah, what was the emotional impact of seeing the teams around you just disappear?
I mean, it was terrible. Like, for me, I think it's still, you know, like, I'm with some of the former Rockers. Like, for us, it was extremely difficult when the Rockers ended. We were on the verge of actually, not saying we would have won a championship, but we lost to Detroit the year that they won the championship. So we were right there. And then the team folds. And so all that hard work, everything, all the camaraderie, all the great fans we had, it's just everything became non-existent. So it's very hard to explain. But at the end of the day, you know, I could talk about that. But then you have Cynthia Cooper and Cheryl Suits with 4 rings. And
yeah. I mean, they're
the Houston Comets. They're the Houston Comets. And, like, yeah. none of that is recognized. Like, yeah. I was close to
make.
Yeah, yeah, or the trophies.
No, I read something that was like the trophies were in, like, some like yeah. shed. Like, I was like, what do you mean a yeah. shed? Like,
yeah, like, I think that's low-key disrespectful. And for me, I just feel like, if the WNBA could, like, there are a few franchises that I would love for them to bring back.
Name them.
And pay homage to.
Name them. Well, I mean, obviously
the Houston Comets, and of course I want the Charlotte Sting to come back.
Sacramento Modern.
I want to be a part of
Portland should get a chance.
Yeah. No, I think Portland's great. Like, and obviously, I mean, Cleveland rocks, so you got to bring the Rockers back.
So
we had a great
five,
fan. We had a great, yeah. Like, basically all of them. Okay?
Everybody.
Let's be clear. Bring them all back.
Okay, wait. If y'all could bring a team to a new city, mm-hmm. where would y'all bring a team to?
I was going to say Miami, but we already had a team. So
I would say Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was going to say Philly, too. I think they have good fans out there. they support their team.
Because I was like, what about Philly? Imagine everybody's pushing this Philly. I'm like, what? Like,
imagine the diehard Philly fans for the NBA team. Ooh,
that's true.
I don't know if that's good.
Listen,
I think it would bring great exposure because clearly we got some diehard Vegas fans down here. Yeah. Like literally,
who has the best fans crazy. From when y'all were playing? I know it's like different times now because you know the Aces.
I say.
Your time.
I don't know, I can't go against my team. The Mystics are my team, but the Mercury, their fans are like, it could be Tuesday.
X-Factor is an intense
and
time.
The X-Factor would come out and support.
Well, like, they have to. It's hot. That's great.
You know, DC fans were always great. Like, I think, you know, DC led the league in attendance for like a bunch of years. And, you know, the fans always showed up.
Mercury.
I think the Mercury fans.
X-Factors.
The X-Factors are like.
I mean, Sacramento, y'all know about the Cowbells.
Yeah, we do know about the Cowbells playing there. That was, you got six men, the Cowbells. Yeah.
Now, I feel like Tisha might have some stories about, like, fans coming up. What's your craziest fan story?
Yo, this is like a really true story, okay? So I'm doing autographs at the mall. So, and this lady comes and she asked me to autograph her leg, like with a Sharpie. And I'm like, a Sharpie? She was like, yeah, I have a tattoo appointment.
I knew it.
So when I leave here, I'm going to go get it tatted. I was like, are you sure? Have you thought about it? She was like, no, I'm like right positive. And I was like, okay. Yeah. So that's
did she ever come back and show it to you?
Oh, she got it.
Oh, she got it.
Yeah. So if you're out there listening, send me a pic. I want to see if it's still, you know, if you need a refill or whatever.
A little touch up.
A little touch up.
It's on T-shirt. Monique, you have the privilege of like being able to be a consumer of the league and then playing in the league. Was there any fan moment that you had as a child when you were like, oh my God, this is my favorite player, and you ran up to her?
Probably. What I talked about earlier, like Mystics games were like the thing to do in the summer in DC was to go to Mystics games growing up. And, you know, we looked forward to the summer. We looked forward to the season. I would get on the bus, go down to the games, stay after the games and just wait for players. That was like my favorite thing. I would wait for the players to come through the garage. And it came full circle when I played for the Mystics. And I'm like, I'm driving out the garage and I'm like, wow, I used to stand out here and wait just to see players come through. So. That was always a memory of mine. I did one time sneak into NBA All-Star.
Okay.
When it was in D.C. That was, like, so fun. I knew the reporters, and I was there. They have, like, you know, they have practice, so they bring in people to be fill-ins for players so they can make sure, you know. So I was a fill-in for, like, introductions, and so I was in there. But you're supposed to leave after, you know, they do the run-through, the dry run. And so one of the reporters was like, you can come in the newsroom with me and just wait till the game starts. And I was like, all right, bet. So I'm just, like, scoping out. I'm hiding out. And the game starts. I come out the media room.
Peeking behind the wall, like...
I had a seat like three rows from the court too. Wow. Like Lil Bow Wow was like a seat in front of me. Vivica Fox was like next to me, and I was just like sitting in my seat. I was nervous the whole time because I'm like, somebody was like, "Excuse me, this is my seat." But that was always
great
a good time.
Time
too. Yeah.
Who was y'all's dream? Well, I guess now if you're coming back to a game and you're chilling as like a legend in the game, who do you want sitting beside you right there courtside?
A player or a celebrity?
A celebrity, right?
A celebrity.
I would say Will Smith for me.
Mm.
I love you, Will.
I feel like he'd be like a great...
Even after the Oscars?
Yeah. I think that made me like him even
more.
Yeah. Okay.
Same. Honestly, same. Because
it's always like he's the nice guy. I guess I kind of, you know, have mutual respect, you know, because
it.
I'm always I'm cool with low key, but I go 0 to 100 real quick. And that's I felt Will in that moment because you're so laid back, and then it's just like when you get mad, you do something crazy because you're not used to going there.
I respect anyways, but okay. So we have Chastity and Will.
I would say probably Michelle Obama.
Tisha and Michelle.
I'm going to say Wanda Sykes because she's funny.
Y'all be fun.
Yeah, we want comedians, right? Yeah. We want to have a good time.
She goes to Sparks games sometimes, and I've seen her there, and she, like, talks trash courtside, so I think it would be fun to sit with somebody who would, like, you know, yell at the players.
Yeah.
That would be a good time
laugh,
for sure.
So, yeah.
It was dope is that, you know, there was a heavy celebrity presence at the inception of the league, and now we're bringing it back around there, and so it's like the WNBA is a thing to do. There's so much excitement, but with that, it's like, because the product on the court is so good. And so what have you seen player-wise, branding-wise, skill-wise that has impressed you all? Because y'all can be critical because y'all been in this thing, right?
Yeah.
So what has impressed you recently from this new generation?
I mean, it's very hard for us to answer that question. I know Tisha looked over like, I was a dime thrower. Like, I was literally doing the same thing they're doing now. Her and Nikki Teasley, I got to say, yeah. You and Nikki Teasley
she
were
said,
like,
I'm in my style.
They created that. So, I mean, I don't get into the old school versus new school. I know there's a lot of things we could do. Like, I felt like, you know, when I played, I was ahead of the game. So I would just like to address my growth is from the coaching standpoint, mm-hmm. because it was like, if I thought about shooting a three, which I tried, I got cursed out. Like, I was like,
she did not have the green light.
Yeah, I was sent to the bench. And
times
now,
have changed.
Yeah, times have changed. Mm-hmm. So it's like, people weren't allowed to see like everything I could do. Cause it was like, Chaz, you give the ball to Tisha as soon as you get the ball.
Get on the block.
Yeah, get on the block. It wasn't like, you know, I could put the, and I could, because obviously we all grew up playing with guys. So if we couldn't handle the bar, handle the rock, we weren't on the court, you know, pretty much. I mean, so at the end of the day, I think the growth of the coaches to allow women's basketball players to show their elite skill level from all the ranges of like shooting the three ball, handling the ball if you're a forward, stretch, you know, having a point forward.
Yeah, it's almost like positionless now.
Yeah, it's positionless now. Like before it was, you know, even Mo, like, with certain things, like, no, this is what you're doing in the offense. You know what I mean?
It's some ballers.
There's some real ballers.
Go out there, drop buckets, Jewel Lloyd.
Like, but they also had a green light to take, like, 28 shots. I think Mo would have loved that. Mo would have loved the opportunity to have 28 attempts.
I mean, they're really good. Like, Breonna Stewart is out there killing the game. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
The skill set is beautiful. Like, I mean, but I think, you know, just to say, like, I think it's more so coaches and the style of play.
So you like the positionless style of play?
Yeah. I mean, I don't call it positionless. I just think I think you allow players to do what they can do. Not boxing them in. You know?
Yeah, but like
imagine if they boxed Lauren Jackson and Stewie in. Like, because they sim like Lisa Leslie towards the end of her career, Coop allowed her to, you know, stretch her game out, and then that's when she showed she could shoot the shot. But she probably done that her entire career.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, just the rise in coaches saying, oh, these women can really play. They can do a lot more than.
Yeah, but like the true centers, like you said, back to the basket, and true point guards is like. Even in the NBA side, I think the Warriors kind of started it. It's like kind of going away. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have Vandersloot and Chelsea Gray, but after that, like, who's a true point guard?
That's true.
You know,
like, there's like there's a debate online, like the return of the true point guard.
I think it's gonna be in a few years. It's gonna be like dinosaurs. They'll be extinct. It's like the true centers too. I mean,
there are no centers in the NBA anymore.
Right,
which is
exactly.
Unfortunate.
That's what I'm saying.
Joker's a center.
I mean, no, he is, but I'm saying. And that's why I think, well, we're not talking about the NBA, we're talking about the WNBA, but the WNBA still has centers. We still have back-to-back centers and power forwards. We do. I mean, and their teams usually win.
Yeah.
Brittany Griner is unstoppable on the post. Aaliyah Boston is unstoppable with her back to the basket. Asia has, you know, elevated her game, but when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, where does she go?
Yeah.
And no one can stop her, you know? So I hope that continues because I like positionless basketball, but I also think the NBA is pushing players out that have certain skill sets that are integral to the game. And like that's why I feel like Denver might have a run at it because no one's going to stop Jokic. Like, yeah, he shoots the three ball, but at the same time, he gets down in the paint and no one can stop him.
Yeah.
No one can stop him. So they never kind of have
Even if it's slow motion.
Even if it's slow motion. And like to Tisha's point, you know, they actually have a point guard that actually – you know, he's a combo guard, but at the end of the day, he made everyone on the team better, like Chelsea Gray does for Skylar did for Phoenix, but we don't understand. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, like, you still need two critical positions.
Yes,
and I think surrounding that, it does kind of become positionless basketball. Because if you look at the champions, that's pretty much you have a center. Mm-hmm. "Quote unquote," we don't want to call it that anymore. And you have a
point guard.
And you have a point guard. Those are the teams winning championships.
Everyone here has such longevity in the game. We've mentioned it many times, but I need to know the secrets of staying in the league that's this competitive and limited for entry.
I mean, dedication, sacrifice. hard work.
What's the extra step, Tisha? Because you can say that for, like, those who succeed in college.
Yeah, I mean, taking care of your body, eating right, stretching, doing the cold pool after practice. It's just a lot of stuff that goes into it that is like the three-hour practice can be extended to 6 hours because, you know, if you lift weights, if you do your treatment, if you stretch, I mean, foam roll, I mean, I can, and these days it's so much easier because you can actually go home and do game ready and the little boots or whatever, Normatec. I mean, I didn't have any of that. I had to stay in the gym and really take care of my body, make sure I go home and, you know, hydrate, drink water, you know, like eat right so I could get ready. And, you know, it more like all the back-to-backs, the traveling, there's so much that goes into it. And if you don't really rest, eat right and all of that, I mean, it can take years away from you. So I think that's the most important thing, but it just comes with a lot of dedication and sacrifice and really in tune yourself, like with to see what you need. Not everybody needs the same thing, so mm-hmm. you kind of have to know and then trust the people around you to help you.
Mm-hmm. You got to be able to hoop, though.
This is like, oh, yeah, for sure.
A lot of young players, and we saw it this year and we've seen it the past couple of years, a lot of players who mm-hmm. were pretty good college players who mm-hmm. you would think would be successful when they got to the W, but like when you get to the W, it's eye-opening. It'll be these players you may have never heard about, but they can hoop. Mm-hmm. And you get up there and you think you can play, but these players have been in the game. They're mm-hmm. grown women, so really working on your game and being able to compete.
What's the biggest difference between collegiate play and W play?
I'd say everybody can hoop in the W, like even down to the 12th woman. She may not play, but she can ball. They're women, so they're maybe stronger. The game is fast. You got to learn fast. The season is short, so it's not a lot of time to really like build chemistry. What you got training camp for about 3 weeks, then it's like you hit the ground going. So I think the pace of play is different, and just the skill level is higher. Like every night you're playing against the best in the world. In college, you might play against, you know, NC State now. You
might play watch against, now.
In college, you might play against like a small school.
Watch your mouth. 2 NC State on the
we
team.
We can't right
watch
now because we're not going
to
talk about
the ACC battle right now.
In the WNBA, you're playing against the best in the world, so you got to be able to tie your shoes up and be ready to go.
What you saying?
Girl, bye.
It's packed
you know, we had ACC
parts.
On lock the past 3 years, so it's all good.
Longer than three.
Yep, longer than three.
Longer than we're three, don't now. Play.
No, we had a down season.
We living in the present.
I think the biggest component just in professional sports in general, like coaching the NBA and being a part of the WNBA is just the mental aspect of the game. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest difference between college and the pros. In college, if you're the best player on your team, you're not coddled, but, you know, the system is ran for you. Everything kind of, you know, revolves around you, and you're taken care of for 4, 5, 6 years that you're there, that players have been there. And mentally, you haven't – I mean, some players have been challenged, but you haven't been challenged like you'll be challenged when you hit training camp.
Right, you get to the W, everybody's best come from being the best player on their
and
team.
And I tell every pro player that I've coached, like, you got to keep your confidence. That's the hardest thing. Like, you may not be playing. You might have a terrible practice. You may think the coach hates you. They might hate
you. They might hate you.
But at the end of the day, you got to have such thick skin, like, and remember who you are, remember what type of player you are, because mentally, I think that's the hardest component, like, having that tough skin and just knowing what type of player you are, and that's how you persevere when you're in the pros.
Yeah.
Now, Chastity, you coach younger girls now, and knowing what you know now and knowing what they're going to be set up with if they do have aspirations to go to the elite level, how do you keep them encouraged knowing that it's such a small fraction that actually makes it to where they want to go?
I tell them all the time they have to love the game. You know, I consult a lot of AAU programs when I'm not, you know, in the league coaching, and I just tell them, like, this isn't something, like, you can just kind of like.
Mm-hmm.
This is, if you want to be a pro, you got to love it. You got to love it. And when you love something, you're going to sacrifice for it. You're going to discipline yourself. And you don't have to have people tell you you need to work out. You know, you need to train. You know what I mean? At the end of the day. And a lot of players I see, they need that, you know. Even I've coached in the pros, and I was joking with Mary the other day, who's coaching with the Celtics here in the G League, and I was like, yeah, players would come out to me and be like, coach, you want to shoot? I'd be like, nah, I'm tired. I don't want to shoot. I don't want to go in the weight room. Mm-hmm. I'm like, do you want to shoot? You know, at the end of the day, so that's what I mean. Like, they have to have that inner drive too. Yeah. To push themselves.
There's too many distractions these days.
Yeah, they have a lot of distractions. Like, I can't keep, I think Teaspoon spoke on a panel yesterday, and she was just like, you know, telling players, you know, to be at a certain time, and then they're late. Hmm. You know, we can never do that.
That to me is our
like, our generation can never do that. Like, to this day, we're scared to be late. Like, you, Rachel said, be here at 10:30. I'm like,
look at all of our artists like 10 o'clock.
Like, it's like, for old school, it's ingrained. Yeah. And like, coaching high school this year, because I was out of the league, my girls were coming late. They had so many excuses. And then it's like, well, Chaz, you got to be different. Like, it's a new generation. Like, they're allowed to be late. And I'm just like, for me, it's just
how
the
why?
Weirdest
how
thing.
How do you adjust yourself as a coach, like, with that? Like,
no, I didn't adjust myself. They had issues with me. They had to be on time. And I told their parents, like, this, I'm not changing that. I do think you have to change your coaching style with this younger generation, but I do think, like I said, that's why you got to know the history. Like, I do think some of the staples of old school coaching, or just character building, being on time is like, it's just something that should
that
be taught.
That shouldn't even be arguable.
Yeah, like, it shouldn't be. It's not just a basketball thing. It's just a life skill. Some life skills, and that's how, for a coach, even coaching the pros, it's a life skill. Like, Teaspoon talked about it. She was like, I'm gone. You know, I look, the players out there, he's late, he's out there just feeling the ball. I'm nowhere to be found. Like, you have to teach them that life skill, because it's actually helped me be successful. Those little things have helped me be successful and get opportunities and keep getting opportunities. And then also, you know, you hear on the other end, professional players, once they retire, because they still have some of those traits, well, I'm late or da-da-da, it makes us look bad when they're late, some of the stars.
Yeah. That's true.
You know, at the end of the day. So, some of those staples, life skills, I still teach my players. And and actually, they appreciate that.
Yeah, one thing that I'm a little scared about this generation is, like, how do they deal with adversity? I don't think they know how. Like, even the portal. Like, I don't know what y'all think about the portal, but to me, it's like, you just go into the portal, but you don't really have a strong reason. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, it was like, you started something, you're going to figure it out, you're going to finish it. Just to me, it's just like, when there's a little hurdle, they rather go back and start over instead of figuring it out. And life is not like that. Mm-hmm. You know, life is hard, and you're going to have a lot of stuff coming at you, and you can't quit everything. You know, you're going to have to figure it out and just deal with adversity. So that's the only thing that I'm also a little scared about this generation. Being on time is definitely one of them, but other life skills and values that we have and that we had, like, growing up, that were instilled in us by our parents, by our coaches, I feel like that is also going away. And to me, that's a little more scary even than being on time.
It's like, it's fishy too, because I love the mention of the portal, because there's one thing to have agency over yourself and say, hey, this is just not the right fit because of
a strong reason.
Because this is causing me actual aches. Yeah. Like, versus, I want a new city.
The grass is green. The grass is greener mentality is kind of frustrating sometimes, you know, because it's like people always think that something is better out there. And it's not. Like, it's better where you make it better, you know, try to figure it out. Like I said, if you have a really strong reason to move and to go somewhere else, that's cool. But because the coach yelled at you because he didn't touch the line and now you're mad and you go and you put yourself in a portal, to me, that's not a strong enough reason. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Just sometimes I'm really too old school and I try to adjust, some things just don't sit well with my spirit.
It don't feel right. But what feels right I would say 2 out of 3, like being so, like, present on socials. Monique, I'll go to you. For social media, knowing, like, what to share about yourself versus not, like, how do you strike that balance between, hey, I'm for everybody's consumption versus, hey, I need to keep this introspective?
I think for me, it doesn't matter. But I think, like, players, you know, fans have more access to players now. And I think that's a big part of them growing, like their, you know, marketability, their fan base, just growing themselves and their business. Because now players, their businesses, they're not just players. So in a way that they can interact, I think is great. I think it's great for the game. I think it's great for, you know, individuals. I do also believe players do have to be careful. I think we all do, just with some of the things you may say. So people need to monitor themselves, but I'm all for, you know, people speaking up, speaking out, being able to, you know, promote themselves, promote the things that they're passionate about, the league. And I think what's special in particular about WNBA players is their commitment to, like, causes. And they're not afraid to, you know, speak out about the things that they believe in, whether it's popular or not. They're strong, they're powerful, and I think they're very influential. And they use social to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And they should.
Tisha, do you ever fear for your clients either showing too much of themselves online, like their personalities, their lifestyles, or fear for them being outspoken about certain causes? Like, how do you mitigate that, and how do you...
To me, like, if you believe in something, whether it's a cause or whatever it is, and you want to speak about it, I mean, and you own it, to me, I don't have a problem with that. Sometimes I've had issues in the past with a particular player, obviously I'm not going to say her name, just showing too much about partying and drinking and, you know, a lot of that stuff. And I say, hey, maybe you need to tone it down. Like, you don't have to show everything that you're doing, because once you get labeled that you a drinker or party animal, whatever, that's going to affect your bag. Like, it's going to affect your bank account, because that's once you get, it's so you can get labeled in 10 seconds and it might take a lifetime to remove that label. Right. So you have to be very careful what you put out there. And you're like, yo, I'm going to be me, teach. I was like, you can still be you. Just don't put it out there.
Right.
Once you put it out there.
Yeah.
Once you put it out there, you know, the whole world sees it. And then, I mean, I start sending screenshots of teams overseas. They're like, no, we don't want to sign this player because, you know, we know this is the reputation. So I start sending to her so she could see that I'm not making this up. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I say, I represent you, but you represent me too. So if you do some stuff that I've told you several times that you shouldn't be doing, I hope that you trust me enough to why I'm telling you is for your own good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't really... I mean, you follow it up for 1 week, but then you go back to it. At the end of the day, it's just not a good fit. At the end of the day, I want to represent players that respect me enough where I give you some advice is because I truly believe I'm saying the best thing for you in your career.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't listen, I'm not your mother. So, you know, but I do say agents are like mothers. Like, I get on your nerves because I'm trying to keep it, you know, 100 with you or whatever. And then you're like, ugh, and it's like moms. And then eventually like, damn, my mom was right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit like that. And, you know, if it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit. And at the end of the day, I'm always going to try to be as honest as possible with you to what's best for you in your career.
Mm-hmm. And how have you seen it, Chastity, with social media and your players? I'm only picking you all's brains because I know there's going to be another generation listening to this wanting to be in your place, and I know y'all have opinions on the striking that sweet spot with it.
For most high school coaches in high school athletics, and I believe collegiate athletics as well, they already have like a code of conduct for social media. So high school kids kind of have to abide by that to stay on the team. But there, to answer your question with pros and incoming pros across the board, there's a very thin line with your social media brand. And as Tisha said, getting the bag, getting positions. I was very thankful post-career. You know, everyone says, you know, I'm always politically correct on social media. I try to be just positive. But when I got hired in the NBA, there was a thorough search of my social media.
Oh, dear.
Wow, yeah.
A very thorough search.
You better type them keywords with your name.
You're right.
Like,
there's a search
bar. Like,
you can, like, put in the word.
There was a very thorough search of my social media. And also, you know, I had started a podcast, I mean, years ago. I've been on blogging sports, like, once I retired to keep up with the game. And human perception is just very broad.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you think you're being positive and politically correct, you can say something like, even if I'm going through the teams, like, coaches or general managers can have a perception that I'm saying something in a negative way. So it's just a very thin line. I mean, people are getting canceled. Like, so I tell everybody, if you're not Elon Musk or if you're not worth $1 billion, then social media should be branded in a very specific way, considering what you want to do with your life. So once I'm a billionaire, they're going to find out the real chance.
You know what I'm saying? Whatever.
But no, it's just, I mean, in all seriousness, it's a very thin line, you know, between, you know, getting a college scholarship, trying to get in the NBA, trying to get in the WNBA. Obviously, the people in those top positions, they're still human. Yeah. So whatever their values and whatever they believe in, I mean, at the end of the day, everybody can say, like, they're very open.
Even if you apologize later, you already said all of that.
I mean, have you said it? Stand 10 toes down. That's
so I just try to encourage everyone. And, like, if you're getting a bag from having a certain brand, then I say, you know, if you're getting NIL money from having certain things, just understand, like, how long-term can that be? Because you may miss out on other opportunities. So just know what you put out there, you really stand behind, and it's something you can do long term.
And it's out there forever.
Yeah, it's out there forever. So it's just a very.
It looks like that tweet is deleted, and then you still
somebody got it.
Somebody got a screenshot.
It's a very thin line. I do remember. I was asked by, like, I guess I had a Twitter committee to, like, unlike. I had liked someone's tweet, and I was asked to unlike it because it was offensive. So
Yeah. That's intense. Oh, they were really thorough with you, they say. We will find all the things. But anyway, bringing it back, because this is the Legends Podcast. Mo, I'm going to start with you. What makes you legendary?
What makes me legendary? I think my love for the game, my passion for the game. I put in my time. I put in the work. I would say I was a successful professional player, you know. I left the game in a comfortable place when I was ready. And I think anybody that really comes through the WNBA is legendary, because we're all trailblazers and we're, you know, working our way and being examples for younger generations to have the opportunity that maybe some people older than us didn't have, or we were able to have. So I think if you commit to the game and you give to the game, that makes you legendary.
Mm. Spit poet.
Amen.
Chastity, what makes you legendary?
Well, you know I'm legendary because I'm the first from North Carolina.
Period. So it's like,
I love the WNBA just exceeded.
Don't have to guess
that,
me, because I will.
WNBA just gave me a bigger platform. Period. But for me, I was from a very small town.
Shout it out.
Yeah, Roseboro, North Carolina, Sampson County.
You heard? You know,
I can always go back home, but, I mean, I was just sort of a history maker, so everywhere I went, like, I was fortunate enough to have the opportunities and to persevere, and NC State
Pack
first to
all
make the Final Four. You already know
like, what it is.
So,
we believe
you know, I'm you know in the Hall of Fame in North Carolina. Like, I could go on and on,
it's
but
right here,
yeah, it's like I just feel like, you know, I'm a history maker. So whatever, you know, organization or whatever I'm a part of, I'm gonna have an impact, and so that's why I feel like I'm like a living legend, you know, but that also puts pressure because, you know, I'm coaching high school. Everybody like, Chaz, what you doing? Like, do something, you know, big. So that puts pressure. But at the end of the day,
but you are doing.
I just take advantage of all my opportunities, and I try to leave, you know, wherever I am in a better place.
Mm-hmm. You did. North Carolina will show up and show out. That is. Tisha, what makes you legendary?
Oh, man. Yeah, little girl from a small city, small country where soccer is the number one sport, to come to America and really to have the success that I had is kind of crazy. It's like sometimes I have to like pinch myself because it doesn't seem real. But I think to me it just happened because, like Mo said, because of my love and passion for the game, just wanting to be the best that I could be, playing with no regrets, just kind of give it all and just kind of hoping that he would give back to me, and he gave me so much. And yeah, it's crazy. I mean, sometimes like people like talk about, you know, my accolades and stuff, and sometimes it's even hard that it really resonates with me to be like top 25, the only European amongst all those players that were next to me. It's insane, like, really. I say it, and it's kind of sometimes hard for me to put into words what it really means, but to me, just like dream big, you know, put in the work and stuff kind of happens organically. But I know that I made a lot of sacrifices, and probably the first one was like to leave my country, mm-hmm. leave my family. This is like 1994. There's no internet, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't even talk to my parents. Like, I have to write letters. Calling home was so expensive. So just bet on myself. I mean, at a young age, I was like, I'm going to do this. and we'll see what happens. And I'm glad I did.
I'm so glad you did. I'm glad you picked up a basketball and not talking about because the world would have been stripped of a teacher and a chair. Yeah. And I'm glad that you just are a North Carolina legend. You already know what it is.
Tisha know about town. It. That's my claim. Yeah. Yeah. We put Tisha out. We put out LBU. I'm telling you, I'm a history maker. I was mad. It was like.
From a fan to driving up in the same arena, that's really, really dope. Yes. And I hope that you all feel the flowers and all the love and pride that we have in what you all have contributed to the game, because every single one of your stories matter, and they're such huge puzzle pieces to what is now just such, like, an inevitable, like, passion. Like, it's just, the game is so infectious now. There's no denying the greatness that surrounds it, and you all so heavily contributed to it. So thank you so much for joining in this energy today.
Thank you,
legends.
And
I'm so happy that this is like 25 years in this thing with the All-Star game. 25 years in this thing with the All-Star game. And we just keep going. 27 seasons now? That's
yes.
Crazy.
27. Unbelievable.
The W rocks.
Yes.